All right, and
he
now
wants to
let's get started with this interview with DJ Jaffe regarding comprehensive mental health care reform legislation. DJ Jaffe is a longtime advocate, as you will hear, for people who suffer with untreated mental illness and families who have to jump through enormous hoops in order to get care for their loved ones. So I'm going to start things off with testimony that he gave in 2014 at the House Energy and Commerce Committee Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee regarding, at that time, the bill was 3717. So you can hear that, and then we'll start the interview.
My one message is we have to stop ignoring the most seriously ill. We can't go on pretending that they don't exist like the SAMHSA-funded groups want us to do. Until the 1960s, virtually all mental health expenditures were spent on the most seriously ill because the expenditures went to state psychiatric hospitals. But after that, at the request of the mental health industry, the funds are now spent on all others. As a result of this shift from focusing on the seriously mentally ill to trying to improve the mental health of all others, 164,000 are homeless and 300,000 incarcerated, and a disproportionate number of them are people of color who cannot get treatment. Parents, I get calls from people like that all the time. They beg and plead for treatment for their adult children known to have serious mental illness, and the mental health system turns them away. We know how to, they fund everything else. We do know how to treat the most seriously mentally ill to see that they gain, to see that they get treatment. We have to prioritize spending. This is one of those issues where it's not, it may not be that we're not spending enough. We spend $130 billion, an amount that's supposed to go up to $204 billion. What we have to do is start sending the seriously ill to the head of the line. We have to replace mission creep with mission control. If we do that, we can start to address the problems we see. Ed's talked about HIPAA. I won't go into that. There are some, I hate to say it, it's an unpleasant truth, there are some seriously mentally ill people who need to be in hospitals. We do not have enough hospitals for them. We need more hospital beds. This bill doesn't ignore that. It recognizes it and starts to fix it. We have to get, if we can only do one thing, I want to cut spending. Stop SAMHSA from funding anti-treatment advocacy, and stop PAMI from empowering that. And you can see a lot of information on our website how they do that. But SAMHSA is the biggest problem we have. We have to recognize that some people are so sick they don't know they're sick. When you see somebody going down the street screaming at voices only they can hear, yelling that they're the Messiah, it is not because they think they're the Messiah. They know they're the Messiah. The illness tells them they are the Messiah. And as the Messiah, they are never going to volunteer for treatment. And we have to recognize this reality. Most importantly, we have to expand the use of assisted outpatient treatment for a very small group of the most seriously ill. Earlier, I talked about 4 or 5% being seriously mentally ill. There is a small subset of that group who don't recognize their ability to get their need for treatment, who already have multiple arrests, multiple incarcerations, multiple instances of homelessness, all associated with going off voluntary treatment that was made available to them. What AOT does is it says for this tiny group of people, after full due process and including a lawyer, it allows judges to order them into 6 months of mandated and monitored treatment in the community. In the community. It's been proven to reduce violence, 60 serious violence, 66%. Reduce homelessness, arrest, hospitalization, incarceration, 74% each. Peer support and trauma-informed care do not do that. Consistent with the spirit of Olmsted, AOT prevents us from needing expensive, inhumane, inpatient commitment, incarceration, or hospitalization. It allows people to live in the community. It's perhaps the most humane thing we can do. It's an off-ramp before jail. It's like putting a fence at the edge of the cliff rather than an ambulance at the bottom. The committee heard from police chiefs, sheriffs, judges, homeless advocates, parents, and children of the seriously mentally ill in support of AOT. The only opposition comes from the SAMHSA-funded mental health industry. That is the only opposition. And they are basing their opposition based on stuff that is not fact. AOT does not take away everyone's rights. The courts have ruled it's an appropriate way to protect the individual who can't help themselves and public safety. It does not force, does not drive people for care. 80% of those enrolled in AOT said it helped them get well and stay well. It doesn't cause stigma. Research shows that those who received AOT by being integrated in the community perceive less stigma than all others. Police Chief Biasotti said it best when he told the committee, "We have two mental health systems today serving two mutually exclusive populations. Community programs serve those who voluntarily accept and seek treatment. Those who refuse or are too sick to seek treatment voluntarily become a law enforcement responsibility. Mental health officials, especially SAMHSA, seem unwilling to recognize or take responsibility for the second more symptomatic group. Ignoring them puts patients, public, and the police at risk." So I thank Representative Murphy. I thank the congressman who supported it, and I especially support my fellow Democrats. I am about as liberal as you can get. But for too long, we Democrats have failed to recognize unpleasant truths, like not everyone recovers. Sometimes hospitals are needed, and left untreated, there is a small group of the most seriously ill who do become violent. So what I say is we have to pass H.R. 3717. We have to move from a system that requires tragedy to one that prevents it. And on our website and attached to my statement.
You're listening to WTUL New Orleans, the News and Views Show. And I'm pleased to have on the air with me today DJ Jaffe, who is the person that you just heard on the recording when he says we need to stop ignoring the seriously mentally ill. Apologies for that break. We'll have that back for you in just a second. And while we're waiting for that to come back on, just want to remind people that there was another mass shooting in Oregon yesterday, and I know that the president has come out strong. For
You're listening to WTUL New Orleans, the News and Views Show, and I'm pleased to have on the air with me today DJ Jaffe, who is the person that you just heard on the recording when he says we need to stop ignoring the seriously mentally ill, and Kimberly Blaker, who has been instrumental in putting together a day of action for October the 7th, when families from all over the country will be pushing for legislation that's basically a comprehensive overhaul of the broken mental health care system to provide more long-term support services for people with severe mental illness who are in crisis. So welcome, Kimberly and DJ, to WTUL New Orleans.
Thank you for doing this.
Well, it's my pleasure. And just as a matter of full disclosure to listeners,
I will be participating in the Day of Action, as will the organization I started here in New Orleans, Healing Minds NOLA, to explore alternatives to incarceration, homelessness, and death for people with mental illness. But I wanted to kick things off with you, DJ. So listeners were able to hear a little piece of testimony that you gave at a congressional hearing a couple of years ago. If you could let us know when that was, that'd be great. And I'd love to know how you came to be involved with fighting for people with mental illness in the first place.
Well, that hearing was last year when Representative Tim Murphy had originally introduced the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. It had 115 co-sponsors at that time. It didn't move last year, and he's reintroduced it this year as H.R. 2646. I became involved in mental illness in the mid-1980s. I became guardian for my sister-in-law, who has schizophrenia. That led me to join the local chapter here in New York City of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which at the time used to focus on serious mental illness. And I rose, became part of the state, part of the national board. And what I recognized at the time was that families of the mentally ill can beg and plead for treatment and still not get it. And that for someone to get treatment, they had to be well enough to recognize their need for treatment. It was kind of a catch-22. If you're so sick, you don't recognize your need for treatment, then they won't treat you. And then starting to look at the laws, I found that the only way to treat that person was to wait until after they became danger to self or others. As ludicrous as it sounds, the laws in many states require dangerous behavior rather than prevent it. And so this was a little area that I kind of decided to focus on. I wrote the policy for the city, state, and national alliance on involuntary and court-ordered treatment, and then along with Dr. Pollitore, founded the Treatment Advocacy Center in Arlington, Virginia, and was on their board for many years before founding Mental Illness Policy Org.
Wow. So you've been involved for more than 30 years, and you've seen the deterioration of long-term services for people with mental illness through those years. And, you know, in New Orleans, we had a state hospital with 128 long-term inpatient psych beds. And up until Katrina, we didn't really see the same problems that the rest of the country was experiencing until after Katrina, when those beds shut down, and now we're getting hit full throttle because we went from having 128 beds to having none. So we really saw an escalation in people with severe mental illness who, like you say, may be a danger to themselves or others, becoming a law enforcement problem and a problem for the judges and the courts rather than hospitals and being able to receive medical care. So I know that this bill that Representative Murphy wrote and this last session co-sponsored with Representative Eddie Bernice Johnson, who's a Democrat from Texas, I know that there are a number of provisions in the bill that would be immensely helpful to professionals or policymakers in terms of providing services and facilities for people to be able to receive care before they get to that stage where they are a danger to themselves and others. And maybe you could just let listeners know, what are the five most important provisions in H.R. 2646, the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act?
Well, what you're experiencing in New Orleans is the same around the country. We've had this massive migration of mental health dollars away from the most seriously ill. You used to have hospital beds to programs that improve the behavioral wellness of everyone, and that's been the problem. And what I'm seeing in this bill is that it starts to bend the curve. It starts to say we have to focus on the most seriously ill. Five provisions that do that. The first is, the most important is to get rid of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, and homeless. SAMHSA has basically driven state funds away from the seriously mentally ill and away from evidence-based practices. So regaining control of that is important. Another provision is to implement assisted outpatient treatment. Assisted outpatient treatment is for a very small group of the most seriously ill. Basically, 18% of the population over 18 has some form of mental illness, something that's in a diagnostic and statistical manual, but only 4% have serious and persistent mental illness that affects their functioning. A small group of them are so ill they don't know they're ill. When you see somebody screaming they are the Messiah, it's not because they think they're the Messiah, it's because they know it. Their brain tells them so. And when you think that you're the Messiah or you know it, you're not going to accept treatment voluntarily. So what assisted outpatient treatment does is it allows a judge to order someone who's already accumulated multiple episodes of homelessness, arrest, incarceration, or hospitalization to stay in 6 months of mandated and monitored treatment as a condition for living in the community. So it's a lot less expensive, a lot less restrictive, and a lot more humane than the alternatives, which are basically incarceration and inpatient commitment. His bill would provide states a small financial incentive to use those laws. It would also, there's an obscure provision in the third provision, there's an obscure part of Medicaid called the Institutes for Mental Disease Exclusion that basically prevents Medicaid from reimbursing for inpatient hospital care. If somebody has a disease in any organ of their body and they're Medicaid eligible, Medicaid will pay for their hospitalization with one exception, and that is individuals who have a mental illness. So that's why you have state hospitals, because the states have to pay for that responsibility. So what states do is they lock the front door, open the back door, kick patients out, and that puts them on the streets where they become Medicaid eligible, and the federal government picks up half the cost of their care, although the more likely scenario is they go to jail, prison, or a morgue. So this bill starts to ameliorate discrimination against the seriously mentally ill in a small way. It makes a small reform in HIPAA, which is a privacy law, and what HIPAA does is that describes what kind of information doctors and healthcare providers can give to families or to anyone. And what this law does is it says to the doctor or healthcare provider, if the family, you can give families that provide care out of love the same information you give providers who do that for money. So if a family is providing case management, housing, medication management for someone with mental illness, and they need the information in order to facilitate care and to protect health, safety, and welfare, this bill would allow the provider to disclose that information. So those are some of the main provisions of the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act, which we're trying to get passed.
Well, thank you very much for that rundown. And Kimberly, I want to bring you in as well, but just quickly before that, DJ, how's the bill doing in Congress right now? I understand it has 128 co-sponsors. Where is it? What are the challenges? And then, Kimberly, I'd really like to hear from you about your experiences with mental illness, but then also about this day of action coming up and how people can participate in helping to get the legislation passed.
Well, there's the mental health industry, which doesn't want to care for the most seriously ill, and Chief Biasotti, a policeman who's been involved in this, a police chief, has said we have two mental health systems, one run by the mental health system for people who can volunteer and all others are offloaded to police and criminal justice. So the mental health system is radically opposed to this, in large part, is opposed to this bill because it's going to require them to serve the most seriously mentally ill. If you're running a program and someone shows up who needs marriage counseling and someone's homeless, psychotic, schizophrenic, and been eating out of dumpsters, you want to do the marriage counseling. You don't want to help the person with schizophrenia. So they oppose it. They've put intense pressure. There's two people, key people. Representative Upton is chair of the of Michigan, is chair of the House Oversight Energy and Commerce Committee, and Representative Pallone out of New Jersey is the ranking member. And right now they're not bringing the bill to a vote. People ask me, will the bill pass? I definitely see over time the curve. We are stuck to the public is starting to realize that the mental health systems are born and they're with us. So we got to get those two people to bring it to a vote.
Great, great. And you mentioned Chief Biasotti. He's the chief in New York, or?
He's actually, he was a former president of New York State Chiefs of Police, but he wrote the International Association of Chiefs of Police policy on assisted outpatient treatment and got them to endorse the Murphy Bill. It has huge endorsements from NAMI, from families of the seriously ill, from police, district attorneys, the Psychiatric Association. It's really just the SAMHSA-funded community that wants to keep their sugar daddy alive.
It's always about the money. Kimberly, introduce yourself. Let listeners know about your experiences with mental illness, why you got involved, and what you're doing to help to try to get this legislation passed.
Well, I first came into the issue with mental illness about 3.5 years ago. My son was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which is basically a combination of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And over this 3.5 years, he's cycled in and out of the hospital. I think he's had 8 hospitalizations during that time. They usually last anywhere between 3 and 7 days, and it's always an absolute nightmare to get him into the hospital to begin with, and then they release him while he's still in a psychosis, and because there's a shortage of beds, they've got to make space to let other patients who are in crisis into the hospital, and so he has not reached a state of recovery as a result of this. So I first heard about, actually, H.R. 3717 just a few months ago, but there was, by that point, there was nothing going on with the bill. And then it was in June when Representative Murphy reintroduced it as H.R. 2646 that I really started getting involved in this legislation.
And just for listeners, the bill, the name of the bill is the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. And Kimberly also is from Arizona, which is a state very similar to ours politically. So for Louisiana listeners, I think that's important to note that your experience, while it is a national experience, also because I know our state hasn't accepted the Medicaid expansion, and it makes things even that much more difficult for people to access the incredibly broken services that are in existence at all. So I just wanted to fill listeners in on that. But go on about the bill.
Yeah, so actually we are having a National Day of Action on October 7th. It's called the National Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Day. And listeners can go to our website, which is mentalhealthcrisisday.com, where they'll find out more about what they can do. We have more details on H.R. 2646, as well as a lot of information about the types of tragedies that continue to result from the lack of treatment and services for those with serious mental illness. But we also provide information, details on how members of the community can reach out to their own representatives, as well as a couple of key representatives, Representative Frank Pallone and Fred Upton, who are key in moving the legislation forward.
And they're key because they are ranking members of the Health Energy and Commerce Committee, where the bill is right now. Okay.
Right, and right now, Representative Pallone, he is refusing to move the bill forward. He wants to have it watered down, so it's basically rendered meaningless. And Fred Upton, who has been a supporter of the bill, is just he's hearing from too many people that are trying to oppose the bill, and therefore he's not willing to move the bill forward right now. But we really need to make a concerted effort to make these legislators understand the need and the importance of this bill.
Right, and then I know there was also an action that you helped put together to organize family stories, a packet of family stories, to send to legislators all around the country from people who are affected. Has there been any response from that advocacy work? Does it work?
But we're still putting out. We started this task about a month ago. And we have had several new co-sponsors, and some of them are representatives who did receive our packet. We don't know whether or not the packet was the reason. But there's also the fact that most of these packets were sent by mail, and there's a couple-week screening process before it reaches the representatives. So a lot of the reps are probably still just receiving the packets right now. So I think it's going to take a little time before we know what kind of an impact it's had. But we've sent them out to about 80% of the U.S. House representatives, and we're planning to finish them and also reach out to all of their staffers, so that even if the representative really didn't pay attention to it, we can get the staffers reading it and passing the information along to the representatives.
And if I may, just yesterday, Steve Scalise in Louisiana.
Yes, our rep, and the House rep.
And Charles Bustani signed on to it, but those are the only two so far in Louisiana.
That's fantastic, because Representative Scalise, Republican from, I forget exactly his district, but he's also the House Whip. And he's also, I think he's running for House Leader to take John Boehner's place when he leaves. Whether or not he'll be successful is debatable, but and yet to be determined. But if he is successful, he would have tremendous influence over the Republicans in the House, the majority, in terms of whipping them into shape to support this bill. So that is really, really great news. And I know I personally spoke with Congressman Richmond, who's the congressman in my district, who was also enthusiastic and supportive of the bill. And I don't think he's co-sponsored yet, but he did indicate that he would be interested. So for listeners, it would be now would be a good time to call. So, and I know there's also a petition going around. So this day of action includes signing petitions, calling members of Congress, emailing, faxing, Twittering. What else can people do, or does that pretty much cover it? And how can listeners connect with you if they want to learn more? And that question is for both you, Kimberly, and DJ, because I know DJ, you have a website that's like a Wikipedia of information on serious mental illness, and I found it very, very informative and very useful at different times. So, Kimberly, go ahead, DJ. What should be?
I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say Kimberly's really been organizing this national mental health crisis day. So, you can find Mental Illness Policy Org is on Facebook, and you can find Mental Illness Policy Org on Twitter. But the best information on this particular day, which is October 7th, Kimberly knows more about that.
So that would be, if you go to mentalhealthcrisisday.com, that will give a lot more information about the day and what people can do. Probably the number one most effective thing would be a phone call, but a lot of people work during the day and can't make that phone been called during the hours that Congress is open. So social media is also very effective. Facebook, they've both got pages on Facebook, Representatives Upton and Pallone, as well as all the U.S. Representatives. So you can go onto their Facebook pages and comment and make posts. And, of course, Twitter is a really good method for getting the message across. So, again, just visit our page, and it'll give all the information. It's mentalhealthcrisisday.com.
Great. Thank you both so much. And, yeah, for listeners, if you have been impacted or know somebody that's been impacted by not being able to find care for someone with untreated mental illness that isn't resulting in huge physical and emotional costs to the caretaker, please consider participating in this action. And thank you both so much. I will be linking the information that you gave to me onto the we podcast these recordings, so it'll be up on our Tumblr site and the Facebook page, so that people that might have missed it can re-listen. But I'll post any information that you'd like to give me on that post as well. And I know you're both incredibly busy, and I'm so grateful to you for taking the time out to speak with me today. And let's keep our fingers crossed.
Well, thank you for having me, Jana. It's great that you're bringing this to your community's attention.
Thank you.
And good luck with your efforts to get your hospital going down there in Louisiana. I know you've been very involved in that.
Thanks, DJ. Yeah, that's part of the Healing Minds proposal, a one-stop shop hospital, or a one-stop shop facility for mental health care and research at the old charity hospital site. So, yeah, that's another part of what the organization Healing Minds, NOLA, is doing, and people can also find us on Facebook as well. So, but with that, I will leave you, but keep us posted, and so that I can keep listeners updated, and hope to have you both back on sometime in the very near future to talk about the success of the passage of this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to WTUL New Orleans. That was a talk or an interview that I did yesterday, actually, with DJ Jaffe of mentalillnesspolicy.org and Kimberly Blaker, who's an activist and mother pushing a national day of action to urge legislators to co-sponsor and pass H.R. 2646. It's a bipartisan piece of legislation. The name of the bill is the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. It has a number of partners or endorsers, including NAMI and the National Association of Sheriffs, I believe, and a bunch of others anyway.